From DogNation.com, this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans, presented by Marco's Pizza. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
So I saw something on the internet this morning that I thought was pretty fascinating, and I wanted to bring it to you all here on Dog Nation Daily. And I guess as a way of beginning this conversation, it's probably pretty important for me to say that while this is sort of a negative appraisal of UGA, I'm not really, like, offended by it. I'm not, you know, mad about it. I'm more just sort of curious about it. I'm sort of curious to see if we see more of this kind of stuff sort of coming up over the course of the next couple of months as that sort of preseason prediction season begins. And I always love that about college football. I really do like this time of year. You know, some people want to count down every single week until the season starts back. And obviously, I'm excited about the fall, and I love those fall Saturdays when Georgia's playing its football games. But there is an element of the sort of prediction season that I do enjoy. This team's going to be good. This team's not going to be good. Some people call it hot takes, whatever you want to say it. I sort of like that conversation. I just love college football. The way that we show our love for college football is through the conversations that we have about it. And this time of year is when a lot of that stuff really gets heated up. But as I said, I'm a little bit sort of just curious about what's sort of out there about Georgia. The piece comes from CBSSports.com, or at least the first piece that I want to reference here this morning comes from CBSSports.com. They reference an online gambling site, and I apologize. I don't remember which sports book they had this, but you can read the story at CBSSports.com. Maybe we'll put a link to it at the show page when we post the show later on at the worldfamousdognation.com. What they provided is this particular sports book are a bet about the college football playoff. Will your team make the college football playoff? But what gets sort of interesting here is for a few top teams, the teams in the playoff a year ago and sort of the top national teams, a lot of these are Big Ten teams, they also offered a bet, would the team miss the college football playoff? So you essentially have, for a small handful of teams, a yes-no option about making the college football playoff. And if just these online betting odds can be believed here, or if just these online betting odds are kind of paid attention to here, there is some skepticism in the national media when it comes to Georgia. Let me compare Georgia for a moment to Alabama. Now, as a way of explanation here, when you see these sort of betting odds, the plus, the plus means an underdog, the minus means a favorite. So if you look at Alabama here for a moment, they are actually a favorite, more likely to make the college football playoff than miss. They are a yes, minus 220 to make the college football playoff. I realize not everybody follows the gambling odds. What that means is that you would have to bet $220 to get $100 back on Alabama making the college football playoff. In other words, more likely to be in the Final Four than not. Alabama's a plus 175 to miss, basically an underdog to miss out on the college football playoff. Compare that to Georgia for a moment, which is yes, making the playoff at plus 175, no, missing the playoff at minus 220. Once again, the gambling gods can be a little bit obscure from time to time. The overall takeaway on this point, though, is that the gambling folks here, at least according to the ones quoted by CBS Sports, think that Alabama is far more likely to make the playoff in 2018 than is Georgia. Now, is that true for a moment? Obviously, I do SEC Country Live every single afternoon, and you know the one thing that the Georgia, I don't want to say Georgia haters, but fans of other school other than Georgia, the one thing they sort of point out over and over again is that Georgia lost a lot off of last year's team. Obviously, there's the Nick Chubb, there's the Sony Michel, there's the Roquan Smith, the Davin Bellamy, Lorenzo Carter, all the guys that we had as a part of our Dog Nation appreciation. We appreciate those guys for a reason, because in the case of four of them, it was four great years in a Georgia uniform. In Roquan's case, it was 3 years, sort of punctuated by a Butkus Award there at the end of the 2017 season. And there's just sort of this knee-jerk assumption on the part of the gambling market here, the national media that reports these stories, and just sort of the average run-of-the-mill fan, that Alabama is far more likely to be in the college football playoff in 2018 than Georgia is. Georgia's far more likely to miss out than make it. But that's not the only piece of bulletin board material sort of coming the way of the Georgia Bulldogs here on this week. Paul Feinbaum, the longtime SEC analyst, if you will, radio host, now appearing on the SEC Network. He goes on sports radio station WJOX here this week. He says there's a game on Georgia's schedule that he thinks is incredibly concerning for the Dogs, and it's not maybe one of the couple that you would think about most quickly, at least a lot of people would. Paul Feinbaum on WJOX says, I still think Georgia fans should be concerned when they head to South Carolina, a team that Georgia for the most part blew out a year ago. It's the second Saturday of the season, Paul says. Georgia's going to be the favorite, but that's a dangerous game. Well, hold on. In just 1 year from 2017 to 2018, because of the departed stars like the ones that I just mentioned, has Georgia gone from being far more likely to miss the playoff than make it all the way down to the point where it's now a danger to lose to a team like South Carolina, second game of the season? That sort of feels like the sort of old Georgia storyline where you go to South Carolina in September and you sort of scuffle your way through that game. And then, you know, maybe by the end of the season, you've sort of built yourself back up, but be ready for a heart-stopping game against South Carolina. Is that really the renewal of that storyline again for 2018? Well, many of you who watch and listen to the show every day know that I probably don't believe that. I think Georgia's much better than the rest of the country apparently thinks they are, at least the people that I just quoted here. And when you look at the Paul Feinbaum quote from WJOX and the betting odds that are out there that CBSSports.com has published, I really think there are two things going on here. First of all, when it comes to the Feinbaum quote about, hey, Georgia, watch out for South Carolina, I think there is a degree of this, which is sort of wishful thinking. I think there's this thought of, you know, the SEC West has been boring now for a while. Alabama seems to win that thing with regularity. Auburn sort of broke through and, you know, crushed up the monotony a little bit for 2017, but it almost become, at least for the last 3 years, a bit of a rubber stamp of, well, you know, Alabama is going to win the SEC West. And a lot of the hatred that exists from Alabama sometimes is just sort of fatigue of seeing Nick Saban's team always in the big game, whether it be SEC championship or not. I think there's a little bit of a fear that Georgia could potentially do the same kind of thing in the SEC East, and really it's going to be easier for Georgia to do it in the East than it was for Alabama in the West, because the East does not provide the sort of balance of competition that the West has historically. It might be easier for Georgia to dominate the East. And if Georgia does dominate the East, and if Alabama dominates the West, and all of a sudden the SEC football season has the feeling a bit like a boat race, where the team that jumps out in front quickest is the one that emerges the winner at the end, and a lot of the media don't want that, including Paul Feinbaum, who asked to talk about this kind of stuff every single day. I also think when it comes to these betting odds overall, I think there is a just sort of general skepticism of, okay, Georgia, you did it for 1 year, but do we, meaning the collective betting public, the media that pays attention to this kind of stuff, do we honestly believe that you can come back and do it again the following year? And maybe that skepticism is sort of natural. And I think the bottom line for this portion of the discussion is, as I said before, you know, I'm not necessarily bothered by it. I'm not mad about it. I'm more curious about it. I think it's probably the same sort of pathway that a lot of college football programs have had to tread. We saw you do it for 1 year, but can you come back and do it again the following year? Maybe those are just natural questions, and the questions facing Georgia are, you know, to a certain extent, you know, maybe the kinds of things that we should expect for a program that's trying to build up, and in Kirby Smart's case, trying to build up quickly. I think Kirby probably likes a lot of this kind of stuff. I think he probably likes the idea of maybe sneaking up in the SEC here for a 2018, have the attention go to the reigning national champion Alabama, ignore the reigning SEC champion Georgia. That may be just the way that Kirby Smart wants it, but I think, and listen, you know, some people are going to say, well, you're just the Georgia podcast host. You just do Dog Nation Daily. What else would we expect you to think? And maybe that's a fair criticism. Maybe that's a fair thing to say. But nonetheless, I think a lot of the media is going to end up being pretty surprised by Georgia this season. This notion that because of guys that are gone from 2017, because of guys that aren't there anymore, all of a sudden Georgia's sort of naturally destined to take a step back just because the famous names aren't there. You've seen the way that Kirby Smart's recruited the last couple years. You realize the overall talent profile may be higher in 2018 than it was in 2017, even if there isn't quite as much season leadership. Yeah, I think the national media's in for a surprise. I think Georgia's much better in 2018 than some of them expect. Good enough to pay off on a yes bet for the college football playoff? That remains to be seen. Good enough to surprise a whole lot of folks who are expecting maybe meager results from the Dogs? That seems like a pretty definite yes to me. My name is Brandon Adams, and this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans, presented by Marco's Pizza. Glad to have you and them a part of our program every single day, no matter how you get to us. If you watch us on video, we're glad you're here. Dog Nation Facebook and YouTube, the show comes on live at 10 a.m. Then, of course, you can catch it on demand throughout the rest of the day on both those video platforms. We're also available to you on the radio at noon every day on Athens Sports Radio 960 The Ref, and in podcast form, pretty much wherever podcasts are found, Apple Podcasts, Android devices, SoundCloud. The show's posted there, theworldfamousdognation.com. We're just really glad you have found Dog Nation Daily today. We've got Jeff Sintel coming up in a moment. Before that, let me remind you, as I said, Dog Nation Daily is presented by Marco's Pizza. And right now, Marco's Pizza wants you to meet the boss. the boss of all cheese pizza. That's right. It's the Big Cheese. It's from Marco's, and it's made with 5 fresh cheeses, and right now an extra large is just $10.99. Get the Big Cheese from our friends at Marco's Pizza, and you'll be glad you did. It is a great way to feed your family, and I've said this before, my family, huge fans of Marco's Pizza. We love sitting around the TV in the living room and just spending some time together and enjoying a little Marco's Pizza, and that's obviously a great reason to have them a part of Dog Nation Daily. As promised, we'll do Jeff Sintel here in just a moment. A lot of recruiting stuff to get into with Jeff. We'll kind of revisit some of the Nolan Smith stuff from yesterday. Also, kind of a weird scenario unfolding with another current UGA commit. We'll tell you all about that when Jeff Sintel joins us here for our Marlowe's Tavern tell-all on this Tuesday in just a moment. Before that, though, let me give you some audio from Kirby Smart. A couple of things here. One, somewhat surprising. We'll begin with that. One, I think really good news if you're a UGA fan, and something else kind of in between you can sort of figure out for yourself. Obviously, one of the big stories, and it's not great news, but it is a big piece of news that Georgia's dealt with throughout the spring practice thus far, is the fact that the incoming freshman defensive back, Devod Wilson, a guy that had really drawn rave reviews for his first couple practices in a Georgia uniform, he tears his ACL and is going to be out for a while. When Seth Emerson was on the show on Thursday, we talked about the likelihood that that Devod Wilson might miss the entirety of the 2018 season. But when it comes to that scenario, that sort of diagnosis of the Wilson injury, that's not necessarily the sentiment that Kirby Smart shared. He talked on Saturday about the Wilson injury being significant, but gave a little bit of a hopeful outcome maybe for how this might all work out for Devod Wilson in 2018. Listen to Kirby Smart here.
I mean, that's a tough injury because he was a kid that was really coming on for us, and we still think he's going to be able to play next year. It's not a matter of being out. There's a lot of guys that come back from that and are able to play, and he's a bright kid. He's a really hard-working kid. We think he'll heal fast, and I mean, if he's at Zamir's pace, we should be able to hopefully get him back.
Yeah, my issue with Wilson, and it's a kind of an interesting comparison of how fast Zamir White's going here, which is obviously good news for Georgia fans who want to see that young man running the football. But my issue with Wilson returning wasn't so much about, you know, the timeline for the injury as the missed practices that he'll have sort of had to suffer through by the time he gets to come back. Is there too steep of a learning curve at that point in time for a guy that's going to miss probably about 6 months of football practices here and, you know, some sort of football workouts? That's always been my issue with Devod Wilson, but a pretty hopeful tone there from Kirby Smart on what Devod Wilson's future might be. I think that's pretty interesting. But for now, Wilson's not available, and Georgia's sort of left to deal with the reality of that. And what that means is that star position, that fifth defensive back, a lot of guys being kind of cross-trained there to fill a role that Wilson might have been able to fill for a UGA. Some of these names are pretty interesting. Here's a little more from Kirby Smart on how they're filling the gap left by Wilson's injury.
It's made us look at some things at star. We've got to look at some outside backers, very similar to what we had last year when we had Lorenzo out there. So we're working Jaden Hunter, which you guys have seen. We're working Walter Grant. We've taken Mark Webb and allowed him to try to cross-train some. But I think Mark's going to have to be a corner, but we've got to train multiple stars. Obviously, William Poole has done it. Tyreek McGee has done it. But I don't think you can have enough guys to do that position. And Devod was going to be one of those guys. With him out, it's put a little more burden on everybody.
A couple of things there from Kirby Smart that I think are really interesting. When you mentioned like Jaden Hunter and Walter Grant, what I think is kind of cool about that is, and I've explained this before to the extent that I understand football X's and O's, you know, there's so many sets now where you only play with two linebackers on the field. If your defensive back, your fifth defensive back, your star, is also himself a linebacker, all of a sudden you're not at a position mismatch anymore. I think that's kind of a really interesting thing to think about. A guy like Walter Grant doing a little bit of what Lorenzo Carter did some for Georgia last year. I also take it as incredibly complimentary from Kirby Smart towards Mark Webb that he says, we think this young man needs to be a cornerback. Cornerback's the premium position there in that defensive secondary. You're not sort of isolating Webb as a cornerback unless you think he's a pretty good prospect. And every indication is that's exactly what Mark Webb is. In fact, on Saturday, Kirby Smart talked a little more about what Mark Webb brings to the table.
We're going to have to count on him. We're going to have to count on him and some of the younger players to grow up. I think Mark's physicality, the one unique thing about Mark is he's a good tackler. And that's not always a great trait for some corners. So he's physical, he's a good tackler, he really wants to learn the defense. I mean, I think some of the complexities, we probably did him a disservice, you know, that first summer playing all wide out and then flipping him over. So he's getting to where he's comfortable at corner, and then all of a sudden, boom, we drop star on him. So it's put him at a disadvantage, but we would rather him go through spring practice with a disadvantage and then fall allow him to be a corner if we've settled on a star by then.
y'all know the story on Mark Webb, four-star wide receiver, initially recruited to Georgia from the Philadelphia area, switched to defensive back last season, somewhat quietly at first, but apparently has drawn some rave reviews there. I think Webb's a tough guy. You heard that description from Kirby Smart there a bit, that he's a really good tackler. I think he's a really interesting guy to think about in that Georgia secondary, and my expectation is that Webb's going to end up having a pretty good career there. I don't think that Kirby Smart would be speaking as warmly about him if he didn't feel like he was good at that spot. And as a cornerback at Georgia, that's a pretty valuable spot for him to be indeed. So interesting stuff from Kirby Smart on the UGA secondary. It's good to have you with us here today on Dog Nation Daily. We've got some more football content coming up later on after the SEC through, taking a look at the Georgia defensive line. But for now, though, let's get ready for our Marlowe's Tavern tell-all, an update on UGA recruiting from Jeff Sintel. And it's good to have you with us on Dog Nation Daily.
From Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
And we'll get ready to say hello to Jeff Sintel as part of our Marlowe's Tavern tell-all on this Tuesday here on Dog Nation Daily. And Jeff, happy, week after Easter. Saw some photographs from your family on social media. You were all cleaned up and dressed up. Of course, the kids were all looking great. Looks like you all had a very happy Easter.
We did, man. We hunted. We went on the hunt for far too many eggs. Saw an Easter egg hunt with about 50 kids at about 2,000 eggs. And the all's right with the world, man, because when the big kids got too many, they put them down on the ground for the little kids to gobble up. So that's yin and yang and harmony on Easter for sure.
Yeah, I don't know what to say about my kids when it comes to these Easter egg hunts. You know, they are both, I have a six-year-old and an almost three-year-old, they are both like so laser-focused on these Easter egg hunts. They're not about socializing. They're not about, hanging out with friends, posing for pictures. It's about collecting as many eggs as they can, because they've been told there's some candy inside them or maybe a little bit of money, depending on which Easter egg hunt you go to. I don't know if that means future success because they're going to be driven to succeed or sort of future isolation because they're going to be wrapped up in their own stuff too much. But they definitely have their game face on when it comes to the Easter egg hunts.
Obsessing over the prize egg and the golden egg. Is that anything like their papa obsessing over five stars, maybe?
Yeah, maybe the apple doesn't fall too far from the tree on that. That's a good point. It's good to have you with us as part of our Marlowe's Tavern tell-all here this Tuesday. You know, we do the Marlowe's Tavern tell-all as a way of kind of keeping you up to date on that chef-inspired food at Marlowe's and kind of comparing Marlowe's to some of the other spots around town and why the Marlowe's food is so much better. In fact, you think salads come in a bag. A lot of places they do, but not at Marlowe's. Marlowe's lettuce blend is chopped and mixed by our chefs every day. And yes, there are at least 10 kinds of lettuce in each salad to create a salad you want to eat, not a salad you have to eat. It's part of our Marlowe's Tavern tell-all this Tuesday here on a Dog Nation Daily. And Jeff, tell us all about the Nolan Smith saga from over the weekend. Of course, Sunday was not just Easter. It was also April 1st, April Fool's Day. And Nolan Smith's had some fun with that. This is sort of a window into his personality, is it not? This is a guy that, certainly enjoys the recruiting process here and the attention that kind of comes his way through that. That's too big of a temptation maybe for him to avoid. This is sort of classic Nolan Smith in a lot of ways, is it not?
Classic. Lots of ballyhoo, tomfoolery, boys being boys. And somehow Nolan is such a charismatic personality that he can interject all this drama in his recruitment despite the following pillars is what I would call it. Number one, Georgia was his first offer. Number two, Georgia is his home state school and his in-state school. Number three, he has a whole lot of state pride. Number four, he finds himself always kind of being that down-low recruiter talking to other guys to come play with him at Georgia. And he's also a guy, quite simply, that's going to be worth any aggravation he gives anyone out there. Yeah, he put that story out. I kind of didn't want any party to it. I kind of played the role of Vin Scully there whenever I was listening to those Dodger broadcasts or even Pat Summerall listening to those NFL telecasts. And the cameras, the network cameras would never show the streaker across the field or the guy just acting silly because they knew it would inspire the works and deeds of others and copycats galore. That stuff's fun to hang out on Twitter and do all that, but luckily, Nolan only gave the fan base, anybody that was worried, about an hour's worth of worry on Easter and April Fool's Day to think about his commitment. And I thought our Dog Nation colleague, Cy Brown, had an interesting line in his work today where he called him Trollin' Smith and not Nolan Smith.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. Kind of an interesting description of that. It's kind of funny to me, Jeff, and you obviously know this so much better because you cover it every single day, but you could really put recruits into two categories for the most part, broad categories anyway. You have some guys that don't really either care that much about the recruiting process, don't know that much about it, just sort of go about their business and, you know, really, you know, don't cultivate any attention whatsoever. You have some other folks who sort of really seem to understand how to play the game, and when you read the sort of fake text from Nolan, there is no doubt that he clearly knows how this game is played. He's watched how other people have played this game in the past, and he is definitely sort of the in the know camp when it comes to the when it comes to how the recruiting process all plays out. I think that's probably fair to say.
Well, Brandon, the immediate tell, if you wanted to look at this, like my kids look at Indiana Jones movies or maybe the Da Vinci Code for the modern sect or whatever, is if you look through that text and if you look through that Twitter message, that tweet, there was no respect my decision and there was no interviews, please. So really, you don't have those little things. That's kind of like anybody that follows the Game of Thrones series or saga on HBO. You got to have the king seal, and I guess the seal of a decommitment has to be no interviews, please.
That's exactly right. That may have been the tell that we all needed on that one. On to a more serious subject here for a moment. Jeff, a lot of internet chatter about 2019 offensive line commit for Georgia, Luke Griffin. What can you tell us about what's going on with him at the moment? This is obviously, you know, I think a confusing time for Griffin maybe right now.
Yeah, it definitely happens in the evolution of every recruit. Let's remember, Luke Griffin committed as the first member of the class of 2019. I believe he did it around June of 2016, before Kirby's first season in Athens. And let's see what's happened to him since. He's had two ACL injuries. One was in the basketball season of his freshman year. The second one of those was in the football season of his junior year. So you've got a situation where Luke's not even cleared yet to start working out and competing again. So it is a situation. I remember when recruits really get it, when they get these early offers, they say something like, okay, I'm a sophomore, I'm a freshman, I got this big offer. Well, I can't go play there tomorrow or even at the end of this year. This offer is only good is if they still want me and I'm still morphing and I'm still evolving into a great player when my time is up. And what you have here is maybe Georgia, it's all powered by communication. He's noticed that the communication is dwindled from Georgia, where he barely hears from them from Georgia. And that is a sign that Georgia is no longer that highly invested in you with your time and with your efforts. And so when he doesn't hear things, that is kind of the handwriting on the wall. In some ways, Brandon, it's kind of like that high school relationship where a friend doesn't call you back, or a potential prom date doesn't call you back.
Sure.
And everybody can realize is when they're not blowing up your phone and your phone is dry, as the young folks might say, then tends to reason that you're not as wanted, even though you're a committed member of the class. And interesting what has happened here, Alabama and Florida and other schools have come into the light here for Luke Griffin. And I think it is something that happens, and it's maybe kind of that part of recruiting that gives everyone heartburn, but at least this one sort of has a happy ending where mega big schools like Alabama and Florida and also many others are taking a good look at Luke Griffin now as well.
Yeah, without a doubt, I hope that young man certainly finds a place to play, even if it's at University of Georgia. I hope he finds a place to play where he's happy and comfortable. That's what we wish for all these players, whether they end up at UGA or not. But I don't want to get too deep in the muck and the mire on stuff like this. I guess there is one thing that does kind of leave me a bit curious. It seems like now we see a little bit of a trend emerging at Georgia where some of the earliest guys to commit to Georgia end up being some of the least likely guys to show up in the final class. Why is that, Jeff? What happens over the course of time with Georgia here? Is there anything you can kind of tell us about that? Because we saw a lot of this in 2018 where the earlier you committed to Georgia, in some cases, it sort of seemed like the least likely you were to sort of be in the class when it was all said and done.
Well, the point there, Brandon, that readily comes to mind here is that when you committed to Georgia early in the 2017 cycle for the 2018 class, you didn't know what Georgia you were committing to. Were you committing to the 8-5? Was going to make a move maybe to the 9-3? Or were you going to commit to something else that's even trending higher than that? And right now, when people commit to Georgia, they're committing to a national championship contender and even a top five or a top 10 team. By all accounts, no matter whether you got Florida glasses on, whether you got Auburn glasses on, whether you got purple and orange Clemson glasses on, Georgia has established itself as a top five and a top 10 team. I think the main thing for your point there, Brandon, my only offering on that one is you need to be an elite athlete to hold on to these offers, because Owen Popoe was offered before he entered the ninth grade. Nolan Smith was offered early in his freshman year as well at Calvary Day. But if you're an elite athlete, that will kind of stick. But some of the size athletes, Lou Griffin is a good example here. I mean, I think he was already 6'5 and 270 when he wowed Georgia at a camp in that summer of 2016. And everyone thought, wow, look at him now. Imagine what he's going to be like when he's a senior. And if that player doesn't continue to get bigger and bigger, especially size with young people, that's always something to remember here, because everybody remembers that kid in eighth grade that was the monster on the football team or the baseball team or even the basketball team. But when you see him in 10th and 11th grade, he kind of looks like he's only grown an inch and put on about 10 or 15 more pounds. Very, 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 it's a very tough evaluation for these young offensive linemen, especially because a lot of them might be big and then a lot of them might have some coordination. But they've really got to keep getting a lot stronger and a lot better at what they do with their technique and skill in order to still be a top five offensive line prospect 2 years after the fact when all these offers come.
2019 quarterback Ryan Helinski has put Georgia in his final group top seven that he releases online. And I told you before, it seems like Georgia may have gotten in on Helinski right at the right time, because there's been a lot of sort of online chatter about Helinski sort of really ever since the Georgia stuff sort of popped up here. Is this one of those things of the media is chasing the quarterback because the quarterback is now, you know, being pursued by Georgia? Or is this one of those things where Georgia really did see early on Helinski that this was potentially an interesting quarterback to add into a competitive mix that's going to include, you know, Fromm and Fields and Stetson Bennett here moving forward? Which happened first, the chicken or the egg here, when it comes to the attention that Helinski's been getting as of late?
Well, I would call it love at first sight or love at first text or like at first text, to be very accurate. It seems there's been three schools that have hit him up the most. And Ryan Helinski, I guess I kind of caught word that he was on Georgia's radar maybe mid-February, and things were really developing with a relationship there. And Helinski is a fantastic quarterback. You just watch the film, see that 72% completion rate, and I really went to the mattresses for a reporter tribe, so to speak, and I dug up some things, because the one thing that I was always concerned about with Helinski was he led his team to a 6-6 record as a junior and an 0-5 record in league play. Now, I realized the schedule when I saw some of the names like St. John Bosco and Chaminade and Mater Dei that are out in California. They perennial national contenders, but I looked at his schedule. And Brandon, of the six of the last seven teams he faced, every one of those teams were inside the nation's top 150 teams. So imagine a kid out of a metro Atlanta catching an Archer or a Grayson or a Colquitt County about every week. That's what Helinski did, even putting up those sterling numbers. I think 33 touchdown passes, four interceptions, I believe. And Georgia, Ole Miss, and South Carolina have consistently recruited Helinski, the hardest and the best. A couple more tea leaves to look at here is Kirby Smart sent Ryan Helinski a text on Easter Sunday thanking him for including Georgia in his top seven. He's going to visit Ole Miss. He's going to visit, try to squeeze in another visit to Oregon. He's going to visit Georgia. He's going to try and work in a Texas A&M visit as well. But Georgia will be an unofficial visit again on the 20th and the 21st of this month. That will set up eventually his final three. He plans to commit on his brother Tyler's, his late brother Tyler's birthday on May the 26th, and he might even postpone that top three until he gets to see Georgia on G-Day, because it's expected to be within about 2 to 3 weeks. Ryan Helinski, I've even got information that maybe South Carolina might have a different quarterback in mind than Ryan Helinski.
Okay.
I continue to think that the chances for Georgia here with Helinski seem to get brighter by the day.
Well, that's really interesting, Jeff. Thanks for dropping that nugget in. Another top eight gets released. It's John Emery Jr., running back from Louisiana. And maybe I'm wrong about this. What this kind of reminds me of is what we've seen from Alabama over the last few years of, you know, top prospects have a way of just sort of sprinkling Alabama in their, you know, their top five, top ten, because it sort of looks good to have that, you know, Bama logo there. Is this Georgia G one of those things that we're going to start seeing in top eights just because it sort of looks good to have it there? Or is there something a little more real here with a Georgia and Emory than I'm giving it credit for?
Well, you got to look at the parameters. It's kind of like all those 10 types of lettuce there on those Marlowe salads. There's a lot of things to think about there with his top eight. Number one is it will be one of those eight. There will be no shenanigans about that. He's a Tennessee legacy, something to consider there as well. Really likes Auburn. Now, top five back nationally. Dale McGee is recruiting a running back, so a top five running back plus Dale McGee usually means equals out the equation that's committed to the G. But there's a hold on a second moment here because one thing that Emory told our SEC country colleague Sam Spiegelman is that he wants to go to a place where he can be a number one back or a featured back right away. He wants to get a ton of carries. He wants to be kind of one of those bell cow, bring the mail type backs early on in the SEC. And quite frankly, that's just not going to happen at the University of Georgia. He would have to be a tremendous back to get featured status coming in at Georgia, kind of like a Zamir White would be coming in this year at Georgia, but there wouldn't be a Zamir White above him, more mature on the depth chart. I mean, you think about the names, Brian Herrien, Elijah Holyfield, will they be back in 2019? But then you've also got DeAndre Swift, James Cook, Zamir White. I want to know if our readers or listeners or that, our enthusiasts are that leaned in. They see the nugget about James Cook this weekend where he was running in the Pepsi relays in South Florida, and James Cook, considered maybe not to be that afterburner back in the class, he ran a 10.55 in the 100 meters while Tyson Campbell was running a 10.42, I believe. So James Cook now has that extra overdrive gear. A 10.55 for James Cook, that's about as fast as Zamir White has ever ran the 100 meters that I've seen in recorded times during high school track. So I don't think Mr. Emory is going to catch a number one or number two depth chart slot at Georgia anytime soon.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting, Jeff. Let me do here on our Marlowe's Tavern tell-all two quick final questions before we let you go. And I was looking at the state rankings for Georgia, the 24/7 Sports composite, and, you know, obviously look at the top five players in the state. Georgia's got commitments from two of those guys right now, working really hard on two more in Trayvon Walker and Owen Popo. They're obviously huge UGA priorities at the moment. And then the other guy in that top five is Chris Hinton, the five-star defensive end, currently a Michigan commit, but a guy that UGA recruits talk about a lot. How realistic is it to think before now and, you know, December, Georgia could flip Hinton away from Michigan? Is that a real conversation right now?
Well, that's the weight they're going to have on the bar, so to speak. And Georgia families, Georgia commitments are going to try and give Chris Hinton all the information that he needs to really strongly consider Georgia. I think the thing there with Chris Hinton to think about is it's not what anything Georgia's going to do or what commits like Jalen Perry or J.D. Bertrand or Dominic Blaylock and those guys are going to do to kind of bend his ear. I think it's more a matter of what Michigan does. Does Michigan have a successful season? Do they stay out of the three-loss club in 2018 and, you know, provoke good thoughts regarding Jim Harbaugh? That's something to think about there, because I think if Michigan stutters, that's a chance for a school like a Georgia to really pounce and really have a shot at Chris Hinton. But Chris Hinton's from a strong academic family. They value that Big Ten education, and it's really going to take maybe Michigan, a hiccup for Michigan, maybe losing a lot of winnable games in 2018, but it's also going to take Georgia's maybe academic muscle and academic might of that Terry College, you know, whatever they can do to really convince the Hintons that that Georgia is an academic bastion of the South as well.
Yeah.
And if you get Chris Hinton, then there's Miles Hinton looming down the pike,
yep,
his younger brother. And that guy is going to be even more highly rated than Chris. And I've said this before, I think if you're looking for the ideal left tackle replacement for a guy like Andrew Thomas in 2020 when he matriculates on to the NFL, given the way that his career path is going right now with steady progress and good health, Miles Hinton could be an enviable left tackle in the future for anyone, Stanford, Notre Dame, Ohio State, Michigan, and the like.
Boy, Jeff, my life's already getting away from me too fast as it is. We're already talking about replacements for Andrew Thomas here on the Marlowe's Tavern Tell-All. I feel like I want to push the pause button here on my life and not let it go away quite that fast. I've got at least two more years of Thomas in a UGA uniform that I want to try to enjoy.
You do, and you will definitely enjoy them, but recruiting never stops.
That's
you
true.
Remember,
no, you're absolutely right. Let me squeeze it. Go ahead.
Malpin's only 1 year. It's the class of 2020 as well, so he's only one recruiting cycle away.
That's a very good point, Jeff. You are absolutely right about that. Quick final question, then we'll let you go. And this couldn't be less important, but have noticed there's some movement lately between Auburn and Deshaun Sheffield, a 2019 prospect who we used to talk a lot about. I realize he's not really probably a wide receiver anymore. It seems like most of your colleagues in the industry think he's a defensive back maybe now. But as a defensive back, maybe still an interesting prospect. What has sort of happened between George and Deshaun Sheffield? Because it doesn't really seem like we hear that player and that school mentioned in the same sentence very often anymore.
True. Richard LeCount's cousin, I got to remember that. And I think this will be a big year for LeCount. I was talking to a lot of sources over the last week or so about how guys look and how the Georgia program looks. And they really think that Richard LeCount is going to bring, maybe the most fiery, energetic, passionate defensive player that the Bulldogs have had on that side of the ball in quite some time. Maybe names like Makari Rambo, Thomas Davis, Greg Blue, guys like that. But when specifics with here at Sheffield is, I've always thought it was a poor evaluation on Deshaun Sheffield. I kind of always looked at, sadly for the young man, his evaluation is kind of went like Christian Tutt did in the class of 2018. There was a time when Deshaun Sheffield, I believe it was just last January at the True Night King game, he was rated as the nation's number one receiver, kind of like Tutt being rated as the nation's number one cornerback a year prior to his decision. Well, Sheffield's got a lot of things working against him. He's a tweener position. Is he an ideal safety? Is he an ideal receiver? I've always looked at his game and kind of thought he was more of a star type guy, a defensive back and nickel guy that can get in the slot. He also plays on Georgia Independent Schools Association competition. Mm-hmm. So no one really, really sees a lot of great film to project how good he is. If we're being honest, if you look at Deshaun Sheffield's film, first three or four plays, you want to see him having a lot of home run plays against Giza competition. And those are good but not great plays there, maybe ground rule double plays. And I think the main thing there for between Georgia and a guy like Deshaun Sheffield is you've seen his rankings plummet. I think he's now a top 150 prospect, where at one time he was a top 20 prospect. And I don't think Georgia is really actively recruiting Sheffield right now, especially guys like Andrew Booth, guys like VJ Turner, guys like Warren Burrell, but also the immensely popular Kyle Hamilton right
yep.
now. He was at Georgia practices over the weekend with Andrew Booth. He got an eyeful, had another great conversation with Kirby Smart, and he will be back for G-Day. And I do feel that Kyle Hamilton doesn't need to see a whole lot more out there, a lot more data. Needs to see Michigan, needs to see Northwestern. Don't think he will go see Notre Dame again, as some other folks have reported it. If he does, it will be on an official visit. Kyle Hamilton, just really, Brandon, Georgia, kind of like the case with Luke Griffin. Right now, there are guys out there that they like a lot better than Deshaun Sheffield.
Yeah, really interesting stuff, Jeff. We appreciate you always giving us the skinny on UGA recruiting here on Tuesdays on our Marlowe's Tavern Tell-All. Appreciate your time. We'll look forward to reading a bunch from you the rest of the week. And by the way, if you did not catch the Before the Hedges recruiting show last night on the Dog Nation Facebook and YouTube pages with our buddy Hannah Chalker and, of course, Jeff Sintel, make sure you go back and rewatch that. Some good recruiting stuff there. Jeff, we'll look forward to speaking to you later on the week, all right?
Have yourself a great week, sir.
You too.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
Quick programming note here. You are watching or listening to Dog Nation Daily, presented by Marco's Pizza. And coming up in about 5 minutes, we have not been doing Georgia football content for the last really couple weeks after our SEC Through. And frankly, we've just got too much stuff that's not getting talked about. There's some other stuff from Georgia spring practice that we're having a hard time getting to because we've been doing a shorter podcast as of late. So we're going to do a little longer version of the show here in a few minutes and really hit on some of the issues that Kirby Smart addressed on Saturday with the Georgia defensive line. He's concerned about the depth there at that position. We'll talk about that coming up here on Dog Nation Daily presented by Marco's Pizza in a couple of minutes. Before that, though, some SEC news to get to. And there is obviously a criticism of me from time to time that's probably valid, that I have a tendency to read too much into things. I have a tendency to sort of maybe see controversy where it doesn't necessarily need to be. Maybe I'm guilty of that right here, but I am kind of fascinated by this. So Lane Kiffin was interviewed by one of our reporters for SECCountry.com. His name is Andrew Astelford. Andrew and Lane have actually teamed up for a few of these from time to time. And the subject came up of the Alabama offensive coordinator search. Mike Locksley in that job this year after having been an analyst for Alabama the last couple of years. Brian Daboll was the offensive coordinator last year, now moving on as the OC for the Buffalo Bills. And in the attempt of giving Locksley a compliment, he ends up maybe almost taking a jab at Nick Saban. What the quote here is, and we'll have more of this for you on SEC Country Live later on this afternoon, but he's like, yeah, Locksley's a great coach. The truth is, I thought Saban overlooked him for that job last year. So all of a sudden, you have Kiffin, who is, I think, whether it's intentional or unintentional, we may never know, but a guy who's really good at stirring the pot here of, yeah, Locksley's the offensive coordinator at Alabama now, but he should have been the guy last year. Saban overlooked him. You know, it takes what should be a compliment, sort of turns it into either a backhanded compliment or maybe a little bit of a slight. This is the problem that Kiffin provides for Saban. He is on media appearances, print interviews, radio shows, TV appearances, does this kind of stuff all the time. He's always asked about Alabama, but somehow he seems to have a way of answering questions about his former employer that sort of put the ball back in Saban's court, at least maybe some undue attention for Saban. I think this is worth paying attention to in the season to come, especially if that Alabama offense falters. Because, you know, Lane Kiffin's going to be there ready to scoop up more credit for the way that he had that rolling in 2014, 2015, and 2016. Speaking of SEC programs in the Yellowhammer State, sort of a weird narrative coming out of Auburn here for a moment. Auburn has had a ton of injuries so far this spring. Eli Stove, Will Hastings, kind of on and on you go with guys at Auburn who've dealt with some pretty serious injuries. So much so that this week, Gus Malzahn was sort of forced to defend his strength and conditioning program a bit. You know, this is sort of the inverse of what sometimes people have said about Georgia, that dogs have been incredibly healthy for the last 12 months or so, the Devon Wilson injury this spring notwithstanding, that maybe somehow Scott Sinclair is doing a great job of being strength and conditioning coach because Georgia's players are healthier. Auburn apparently suffering from the opposite of that because some guys have got hurt this spring. All of a sudden, maybe Auburn's strength and conditioning program and injury recovery, health is not what it should be. I think all of this is a bunch of bunk on both sides. I mean, listen, no one wants to give Georgia a compliment more than I do, but to say that somehow Georgia is better at avoiding injuries other programs are, that is being fooled by randomness. And to criticize Auburn, which I obviously would enjoy doing, to say that their strength and conditioning program has somehow fallen apart because they've had a few injuries during the spring. You've got 85 guys on scholarship at any one time, a lot of them going through practice. There is going to be a moment or two when you have a couple of injuries pile up at one point in time, but the presence of data does not mean the presence of a narrative. And I think sometimes the media is a little too guilty of trying to construct one, trying to connect unconnected things here. And this is, I think, a bad look for the media pushing the narrative on both sides of this story. Jeremy Pruitt, the Tennessee coach, welcomed in Alvin Kamara on Saturday to a Vols practice. You know, Kamara is the NFL's offensive rookie of the year for the New Orleans Saints. And he talked to the media about how much he enjoys having the former players around the program. And this seems to be a pretty consistent narrative. Kirby Smart talked about this at Georgia. Former Georgia players rave about the way that they've been welcomed in Athens by him. Jeremy Pruitt apparently doing some of the same kind of stuff here. Apparently this is something these former coaches really do truly believe helps the program. The cachet of being an NFL factory, the guys that come back on campus to work out or just watch practice, sort of validates that even more. So Jeremy Pruitt kind of following in Kirby Smart's shoes on that. And then Andy Staples had his list of NFL draft sleepers. Some of these come from the SEC. You had Christian Kirk, the wide receiver from Texas A&M. Kerryon Johnson, the Auburn running back. DJ Chark, the former LSU receiver. I think Chark and Kirk are probably pretty good bets. Kerryon Johnson I'd be a little skeptical of. No Georgia player made this list, though. A little surprised about that because I think there are a couple guys, maybe like an Isaiah Wynn, Lorenzo Carter, that probably do sort of feel like potential draft sleepers. And we'll make that your SEC through. And as promised here on Dog Nation Daily presented by Marco's Pizza, did want to spend a little bit more time looking at kind of what's been going on at Georgia spring practice as of late. And maybe a little bit of a concern from Kirby Smart. You know, we talked last week about how Kirby had sort of held off on criticizing his defense the way that he did for a lot of 2017. Well, that didn't last much longer because on Saturday, Kirby Smart expressed some concerns with the fact that his defensive line was being pushed around a little bit, and he thinks that sort of indicates maybe something somewhat troubling about that group up front for his defense. Here's a little bit of what Kirby had to say about that.
We're struggling a little bit defensively on the defensive line. We just don't have as much depth, and we're not as physical as we need to be. And I don't know if that's a credit to them or a problem for our defense, but something we got to rectify, and we definitely need some help on the depth of the defensive line.
The them there is keeping Kirby's tradition of referring to the offense as the opposition against, as he says, our defense. And that's just kind of what Kirby does as the longtime defensive coach. And I think that most of us would probably admit, yeah, this may be a legit concern here. Georgia's obviously pretty good with its starting group. The guys that play the most, the Rochesters, the Tyler Clarks of the world, you feel pretty good about that. The idea of there being some depth issues, that's probably not a huge surprise. And one of the things that, you know, Georgia's trying to address with his 2019 class, of course, Kirby was asked, now, wait a second, you do have some guys coming in the summer. Are they going to help with this depth issue? And Kirby Smart said, only so much. Here's a little more from Kirby.
Not many in that position. So, I mean, we're excited about the guys we got coming in. I think it's tough to play as a true freshman. You know, we had that crowd of Tyler and Julian and Mikhail and David all that really helped us that one year. We're certainly going to need some help in depth-wise. I think the key is going to be staying healthy, because losing two guys like John and Trenton, I don't think you'd think it would have as much of an effect, but we really only gained one in Devontae Wyatt. So the sum effect of that with Michael Barnett being a little out has put us short some.
So a couple things here, I guess, for some of the national media or the betting public that are skeptical of Georgia making the playoff, they may say, well, this is one of the reasons why we're skeptical because of everything Georgia needs to replace as far as its depth on its defensive line. That may be a fair point to bring up. Kirby also mentioned the name Devontae Wyatt, who is now a part of the 2018 class after initially being a part of the 2017 class. He's always a popular guy in our comment sections. A lot of folks think that Wyatt could have a good Georgia career. He's kind of a fast defensive lineman, a guy that can use his speed, and a lot of Georgia fans really excited about what he brings to the table, albeit in a tough spot here trying to fill in an area of need as a sort of reserve defensive lineman at the moment. Kirby Smart also says we're certainly going to need some help from some other incoming players to the program, a couple freshmen who are going to arrive here in the summer, Tramell Walthour, Jordan Davis. To be completely honest, these were not among Georgia's most heralded recruits, but Kirby thinks there's a lot to like about both these guys. Go back to the recruiting season when Kirby said this about Walthour and Davis.
We think Jordan is a tremendous football player. He's great size and great toughness. Same thing with Tramell. I think it's a position of need for us. So those guys are going to fill a great role for us, because when you start looking at the SEC, I mean, the defensive line is what makes a difference in all these teams, and that's where we want to be. We want to have big physical guys that can rush the passer and push the pocket, and we think both those guys give us that.
I kind of joke with Jeff Sintel about this a little earlier when he was talking about, you know, finding the replacement for Andrew Thomas at left tackle. Obviously, what he says is completely true, that recruiting never stops, and yet, you know, it does seem a little weird to think that you're already fast-forwarding past the career of Andrew Thomas there on the offensive side of the ball and left tackle. But Jeff's point is a good one. When you've got the guys who are, you know, capable quality starters, you got to have backups for them because injuries are going to happen, and you got to have guys waiting in the wings to sort of move up the pecking order here. And obviously, Georgia's dealing with that with its defensive line right now because of all the things that Georgia's done great in recruiting, probably did not knock the ball out of the park when it comes to defensive line with the 2017 class, and maybe even the same thing for 2018, would have liked to have had a few more really quality, capable bodies. Ultimately, do I think that Georgia's got enough to cobble together a good defensive line and a good front? Yeah, that's probably true. I think Kirby Smart, though, does sort of slip in a little bit of a warning there, as long as people stay healthy. If a Julian Rochester gets hurt, if a Tyler Clark gets hurt, does that become a little bit of a problem for Georgia there at that point? Yeah, probably so, but Georgia's also probably in pretty good company because almost every program, even the best of the best, are looking for quality defensive linemen. Georgia apparently in this situation not too different in Georgia's spring practice here in 2018, also unfolding very similar to the one in 2017 when Kirby Smart, the defensive-minded head coach, showed a lot of concern about how his defense was coming together. And so here on our Dog Nation Daily, presented by Marco's Pizza, as we get ready to wrap up, we'll do it the way we always do. You know, we believe here on Dog Nation Daily, good Georgia fans are Gator haters. That's why we do our Gatorator countdown every day on Dog Nation Daily. And 207 days from right now, Georgia goes back to Jacksonville, gets another win over the Florida Gators. It's our Gator Hater countdown here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Marco's Pizza. Also, quick programming note, because of the extra football content on today's show, we're going to give the Daily Double a rest for a little while. We hope to bring that back at a certain point in time, but we got a lot going on with spring football we've got to cover. Let me mention a couple non-football notes here to close out the show. Georgia baseball, Diamond Dogs red hot, took 2 of 3 from Texas A&M over the weekend. Host Georgia Tech tonight, so Diamond Dogs back at it against the in-state rival. And congratulations to the softball team, taking 2 of 3 from Tennessee over the weekend. Number 6 Dogs staying hot there as well. We'll see you tomorrow. Dog Nation Daily, presented by Marco's Pizza.